These voices made headlines this week.
This is CS gas. It does wonders for your digestive system.
There are some large concentrations of troops in Cambodia. That is North Vietnamese and Viet Cong troops.
We support self-determination and an orderly transition to majority rule in every quarter of the globe.
The ABC Radio Network presents Voices in the Headlines, the sounds of the news this week, gathered from around the world by the staff of ABC Radio News.
This is Fred Foy with Voices in the Headlines. Saigon, Vietnam was still a battleground of Vietnamese politics as anti-government Buddhists went into the streets in their continuing campaign to topple the Khi government. Buddhists took a more anti-American tone. In the northern city of Hue, an American library was burned. On Sunday, Buddhists burned themselves to death to underscore their protests. But the Khi government was tough and unyielding in putting down demonstrations. As in one Saigon clash, where ABC's Roger Peterson was in the middle of the action.
We're following a group of Buddhist demonstrators who formed up at Saigon Central Market and began to walk towards the American Embassy. About a block away from the embassy, apparently fearing another massive dose of tear gas, they turned and went back towards the market. Now they're running again. Starting to run towards the market. Monks are stirring up this crowd and gathering more and more people as they go along. Now here we go. Here comes the gas. I'm going into a gas mask now, so this may not make much difference. We're trying to get upwind of the gas so that we don't get it. This is CS gas. It does wonders for your digestive system. I can see some of the gas drifting my way now, so I'm going under the mask. Roger Peterson, ABC, Saigon.
While the Khi government used force to meet street demonstrations, Americans were working behind the scenes to end the political crisis. In Washington, a question about the American role asked of Secretary of State Dean Rusk by ABC's Bob Clark.
Would we be willing to sponsor or arrange peace talks between the Khi regime and the remaining rebel forces?
Well, we're in touch with all sides, and we're encouraging that they be in touch with each other. So that, in the broadest sense, the answer to your question is yes.
ABC asking questions in Vietnam, too. A question for Buddhist leader Tri Quang from ABC's Ray Maloney.
What kind of government would prove acceptable to you?
Chính phủ nào mà thực hiện được cái cuộc bầu cử quốc hội một cách chính đáng?
A government that can realize election in the right way, according to the wish of the people.
That matter of elections still very much the concern of Vietnam critics in the United States, chief among them Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Senator William Fulbright of Arkansas.
In Vietnam, in order to give people who've never had an election the right to have an election, and we call it democracy, we're quite willing to kill thousands and hundreds of thousands of them. This seems to me irrational.
And while the Fulbrights, Rusks, Tri Quangs, and others talked of politics in Vietnam, soldiers went into war. And as the war raged on the battlefield, its grim statistics were tabulated in Washington. A Defense Department spokesman reported on American casualties.
The number of American servicemen reported killed in Vietnam as a result of actions by hostile forces from 14 May to 22 May totals 146. The current number of those reported missing is 202. The number of servicemen reported wounded is 810. The number of those to have died through ground action is 135, and the number of those to have died through air action is 11.
Those figures showing again a big increase in American casualties. And on Saturday, the Pentagon explained why.
There have been more U.S. battalions out in the field than we have, I suspect, ever before. And two, they did suffer casualties above the normal in the Crazy Horse operation.
A footnote to the Vietnam War came from United Nations Secretary General U Thant.
20 years of outside intervention and the presence of a succession of foreign armies have so profoundly affected Vietnamese political life that it seems illusory to represent it as a mere contest between communism and liberal democracy.
Besides U Thant, others were concerned this week over the broader international implications of the Vietnam War and the possibility that the war might spread into neighboring Cambodia. It was charged that Cambodia is a haven for communists. That charge made in an interview with Senator Stuart Symington, back recently from Southeast Asia. ABC's Irv Chapman asking the questions.
What was your observation at the Cambodian border?
The only way that the North Vietnamese troops could have gotten away from the 1st Cavalry was to go through Cambodia, go into Cambodia. There are some large concentrations of troops in Cambodia. That is North Vietnamese and Viet Cong troops.
The subject of a Cambodian refuge for communists was touched on at a news conference by Secretary of State Rusk.
We've been very much interested in the suggestion that's been made, I think, more than once by Prince Sihanouk, that the International Control Commission should strengthen its personnel and its capabilities in order to assure the neutrality and the territorial integrity of Cambodia.
And Secretary Rusk said of Cambodia,
we do know that Cambodia has been used by the Viet Cong, and I suspect also some elements of the North Vietnamese, for infiltration into South Vietnam, and on occasion we know from direct contact with them they've used Cambodia as a sort of safe haven in the course of action originating in South Vietnam.
At a news conference by Army General Stanley Larson, an American military leader just back from Vietnam, General Larson said,
there's plenty of evidence that there are up to 6 regiments. There's enough evidence from prisoners we've taken which admit that they have strong forces in there.
But soon after General Larson's charges that Cambodia is a safe staging ground for communists, the Defense Department contradicted Larson's statement.
The Department of Defense said today, while there have been unconfirmed reports for months of North Vietnamese activity in Cambodia, there exists no evidence strong enough for Commander U.S. Military Assistance Command Vietnam to validate the presence of any North Vietnamese regiment in Cambodia at this time.
The bamboo curtain closed behind 21 Americans more than 10 years ago. They were GIs who elected to live in China rather than return to America after their captivity during the Korean War. That bamboo curtain has parted in the past and did so again this week for Clarence Adams. ABC's Bob Harper met Adams in Hong Kong and asked,
now, what are your plans? How long do you think it'll take you to get squared away and back to the United States?
Frankly, I can't make any plans at the moment. It all depends here mainly on the American Council, how fast they can get things processed and so forth. So I haven't made any plans, really.
The mother of the returned turncoat, Gladys Peoples, told ABC how she felt when she heard that her son, Clarence Adams, was coming home.
Oh, the suspense was just killing. But now, I'm just all up in the air. I don't know. I can't even describe the feeling that I have. It's a nervousness and it's a tingly feeling. You know how that is.
With Adams' return, there are only 2 of the original 21 American turncoats left in China. The story of another American back from Asia, back from Vietnam. PFC Jimmy Williams killed in Vietnam and brought home for burial in his hometown, Wetumpka, Alabama. But PFC Williams was denied burial in private cemeteries and was offered a burial plot in a remote part of the segregated town cemetery. Mrs. John Williams told ABC,
I lost a son, and the only thing I can do for him is to give him a decent burial.
PFC Williams will be buried in a national cemetery at Andersonville, Georgia. In Chicago, it was reported that the Hilton Hotel had turned down show reservations for wounded Vietnam veterans being sponsored on an outing by a civic group. One of the Vietnam veterans told ABC,
I wasn't disappointed. Shocked a little bit, yes, because to hear someone say that they don't want us there, I figured they're not any better than we are. And in fact, I think we're better because we're doing our part for our country.
The Hilton Hotel Company denied the accusation that they'd refused to accommodate the veterans. A Hilton official said,
this
unfortunate incident has grown out of the fact that Mr. Paris was misquoted by the gentleman who called his office last Tuesday to make reservations at the Boulevard Room. As was indicated to the gentleman over the phone, we were willing at that time and are still willing to provide the facilities of the Boulevard Room to these Vietnam veterans at any time, provided the hotel is given time to make adequate arrangements to assure their comfort and enjoyment.
A shooting incident near the American base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, reported by the Pentagon.
At approximately midnight, Cuba time, on the 23rd of May, a patrol of Marines sighted six armed infiltrators inside the base boundary. The infiltrators fired on the patrol, which returned the fire. The infiltrators fled to the Cuban side of the fence with no apparent wounds. So far this year, there have been 11 reported attempts to infiltrate Guantanamo. Only three of these has involved actual gunfire.
By week's end, Fidel Castro was using the Guantanamo incident to charge that the United States was getting ready for an attack on Cuba, and Castro put his country on an alert. The British Union Jack flew over British Guiana for the last time this week, as the colony became an independent country within the Commonwealth. The Prime Minister of New Guyana, Forbes Burnham, said,
"At last, we have arrived at our goal and are now in a position to play a proper and, we hope, a vital role amongst the nations. Together with our Caribbean sisters, we in Guyana can forge a new unity and a new nation. Our decision and determination are that we shall be guided by the democratic concept, but we shall be the pawns of neither East nor West."
In Washington, the first major speech on African affairs by a president of the United States in 5 years, as President Johnson talked on the third anniversary of the Organization of African Unity. Speaking at the White House, the president said,
"We support self-determination and an orderly transition to majority rule in every quarter of the globe. These principles have guided our American policy from India to the Philippines, from Vietnam to Pakistan. They guide our policy today toward Rhodesia."
A full speaking schedule for the president this week. To the International Labor Writers Association, the president said,
"The days of the uproarious industrial conflict are now behind us. The days of flamboyant heroes and identifiable villains, of the rhetoric of scab and sit down and shut out and yellow dog contracts. The days of open warfare between labor and management with winner take all seem to have passed. Of course, there are still inequities, and where we find inequities, we must correct them."
And while signing a bill to ease a railroad freight car shortage, the president had an invitation and a laugh for congressmen.
"If you don't think things are going right, put on your hat and come on down here, and you have to wait 15, 20 minutes sometime, but come on down and tell me about it. And I'd even rather have you do that than write me, because somehow or other, there's always somebody in your office when you write me a letter that lets it leak out, and I read about it on the paper."
The president and others watched the outcome of a primary election in Oregon, where Vietnam was an issue. Congressman Robert Duncan won the Democratic senatorial nomination over an outspoken opponent of the president's Vietnam policy. Congressman Duncan said,
"I think it's an affirmation of the belief of the people of Oregon that the policies which this country has been following in Vietnam, as in other countries around the world since the end of World War II, is the correct one. Namely, that we shall not permit communism to impose its will on its neighbors by force and violence and against their will."
The man Congressman Duncan will oppose in November, GOP senatorial nominee Governor Mark Hatfield, said,
"I expect that there will be many Democrats. In fact, I know there will be, from what has already been indicated to me, swinging to support me in November, as they have always in the past, because I could not have been elected if it hadn't been for strong Democratic support. And I expect to pick up much of that same Democratic support this election as well."
With the Oregon returns in and Senator Morse's endorsed candidate a loser, Senator Morse, in an interview with ABC's Irv Chapman, predicted...
The Johnson administration will be repudiated on the Vietnam War issue by a substantial majority of the voters of my state.
Senator, will you support Hatfield against Duncan?
I shall vote for Hatfield.
A Republican had some things to say about the Oregon primary. Bob Clark of ABC News Washington had a question about it for former Vice President Richard Nixon.
Do you see any lessons for the Republican Party in the Oregon primary and the effect of the Vietnam issue out there?
In looking at that primary, I would say that it demonstrates a deep division within the Democratic Party on Vietnam. It demonstrates that, again, what I have said on several occasions, that this is the first war in America's history in which the president has been unable to unite his own party behind the war effort.
Mr. Nixon, at a news conference in Washington, talked of war and those who encourage it.
The true war party, if there is such a thing in this country, first would be the appeasers. The appeasement policy of Senator Fulbright and his colleagues would, without question, by its reward of aggression, encourage further aggression and will lead to World War III. The administration's policy runs the risk of expanding the war due to the fact that it commits us to a long war.
And Mr. Nixon had some thoughts on the Johnson administration's economics.
If this administration does not move decisively to curb inflation within the next 30 days, we will have a recession, and that recession will potentially wipe out the economic gains of the last 10 years.
Richard Nixon wasn't alone in talking GOP politics. Republican Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York made a speech that some consider an endorsement of a specific Republican ticket for 1968. Governor Rockefeller said,
"Now tonight, ladies and gentlemen, this dinner has a special significance because of the presence here of two great national leaders of our party. One, the distinguished governor of a great sister state in the Midwest, George Romney, and the other, our own great and popular senior senator from New York, Senator Jack Javits. And I find a growing feeling among Republicans, ladies and gentlemen, that it might be nice to have them together in our future."
After that Rockefeller statement, Governor Romney spoke to Long Island, New York Republicans and disagreed with something Lyndon Johnson once said.
"The president, in his last State of the Union address in a carefully developed policy statement, said that a great nation is one which breeds a great people. And this is simply not true. It is not a great nation that breeds a great people. It's a great people that builds a great nation."
The other half of Rockefeller's idea of a good GOP pair, Senator Jacob Javits, said in Washington,
"I'm very pleased and honored to have been so regarded by the governor, and I hope his feelings might be shared by the delegation, which is ultimately elected for the 68 convention from New York. But all that one could say right now is that one is honored, and it must stand at that until the picture becomes much more clear and the time becomes much more seasonable."
With a political season in full bloom, one famous Democrat took himself out of his state's election for governor. Senator Herman Talmadge of Georgia said,
"In accordance with what I think to be the overwhelming majority views of the people of Georgia and in the long-range interest of our state, I shall continue to serve in the United States Senate to the best of my ability."
In Washington, hearings on the controversial drug LSD continued, and New York Senator Robert Kennedy testified.
"In a word, what was an experimental drug has become now a social problem. We must be prepared to deal with that problem, to educate people, particularly young people, about the dangers of LSD. And as LSD has become a problem, a possibility has arisen that public reaction will discourage and dry up legitimate research into the therapeutic use of LSD."
Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate subcommittee looking at the problems of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization heard from presidential advisor John J. McCloy.
"With one foot in NATO and one foot out, France goes to the Soviet Union, whose primary objective over the years, everyone knows, has been the destruction of NATO and the removal of United States troops from European soil, now with something in common, A further objective coinciding with Soviet purposes is a continued discriminatory attitude toward Germany.
Some words on Europe also came from a senator just back from a survey of NATO. With an emphasis on American relations with France, Senator Frank Church of Idaho said,
"The President of the United States has shown admirable restraint against what must seem to be a very serious provocation, and I certainly share what I understand to be his view, that bad manners do not make for good diplomacy."
A report on secret diplomacy this week, secret talks on many issues with Communist China, those talks with the Chinese underway in Warsaw, Poland. This week, a word on the talks from the American who takes part in them, American Ambassador to Poland, John Gronowski.
"We intend to continue using the meetings to explore all possible avenues leading to a reduction of tensions in the Far East. It is clearly to the interest of all concerned to work towards a just and lasting peace in the Far East."
At the Kennedy Space Center at Cape Kennedy, preparations continued for the launching of Gemini 9, scrubbed 2 weeks ago when an Agena target vehicle never went into orbit. Gemini 9 rescheduled again. NASA's Jack King reported to ABC.
"As a result of a failure analysis made on the Atlas following its failure on the original May 17th flight, additional testing was required, and because of the very tight schedule we were in preparing for the Gemini 9A mission, this additional testing required an extension of 1 day to prepare for the mission. So we're now on for June 1st with Gemini 9.
ABC Radio News geared to cover the flight of Gemini 9, scheduled for Wednesday, June 1st. For Hubert Horatio Humphrey this week, a birthday. The Vice President turned 55 on Friday, in good health, good humor, and with birthday greetings from the President, including color photos of Mr. Humphrey and the President. Never letting up on his vigorous speaking engagements, the Vice President addressed garment workers in Chicago and talked about the country of his birth, about the America of today.
"Who will deny amongst us today that America is better, that it is freer, that it is happier, that it is stronger, that it is more just, that it is more compassionate? I think the history books of our time will have to record that this indeed has been a glorious era in which to live."
So went this world this week, and the voices in the headlines.
Voices in the Headlines, a presentation of ABC Radio News, written and produced by H. Paul Jeffers, directed by Bill Gately, executive producer Tom O'Brien, audio engineering by George Halonia, Joe Palmer, and Cy Kantrowitz, your narrator, Fred Foy. This is Ed Jordan inviting you to keep up with the news every hour of every day on this ABC radio station, and to catch up with the news each week on Voices in the Headlines. Thank you.